Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Wellspring Words, the podcast. I should say good morning because for me, it's 6:30 a.m. And I'm joined with another guest. This is Kem, by the way, in case you couldn't recognize the voice by now. I'm joined by another guest who is on a 12-hour time difference from me. And that's quite exciting to wake up so early to do this. And I will just allow her to introduce herself.
Hello, hello. My name is Eniafe Isis, and I am a writer and also the founder of a platform called All Her Words. I am Los Angeles-based, hence the 12-hour difference. So it's currently 6:30 p.m. here in Los Angeles. And I guess, what would you like for me to tell you?
Well, before we get into that, I want to let people know how we kind of know each other, because on this podcast, it's kind of like the meeting of worlds, and also reminding people that, you know, you can have deep connections or deep conversations with people you don't necessarily know. So I met or introduced myself to Eniafe on Instagram. I'd been following her personally and also All Her Words for some time. When I started Wellspring Words, when you start these kind of platforms, you start to sort of attract or notice other platforms similar to her, doing similar things or working in the same capacity for the same kind of goal. And so I remember seeing All Her Words and following it and like, wow, like this is awesome. This is amazing. And then I remember sending you a message saying like, this is the platform I'm doing. I see all the amazing work they're doing. And it's lovely to know that we're kind of on the same path, like working towards the same thing.
Yeah.
But I guess for those who don't exactly know what All Her Words is, can you just explain to our listeners for a bit?
Yes, absolutely. So All Her Words is dedicated to just really honoring the voices of a fuller spectrum of women. And when I say spectrum, of course, I'm speaking to, you know, women like me, women of African-American heritage, women, Black women, but also expanding that to, you know, women of color. We are often women who in the mass media aren't given the same attention as, you know, other women are given. And so I really wanted to build this platform around really honoring our voices. And also it's a platform built on the intention of sort of reimagining storytelling. And I say reimagining, and that word has so much weight and meaning, you know, for me, because to reimagine is sort of to create without bounds. But, you know, oftentimes I think when I think of storytelling, I think of, you know, beginning, middle, and end. And that the story, in order to be the story, has to have some sort of grand ending or resolve. But in real life, you know, our stories, as our lives are incomplete, in process and unfolding, and I am a woman unfolding. So this platform is very much, you know, a mirroring of myself, but also a mirroring of the women, you know, around me, and just really paying homage and honoring our stories as they are unfolding.
Oh my gosh, it's so beautiful. I'm getting the shivers down my spine. I love it. I love it. Because, I mean, lately I've been thinking a lot about collective unity or collective healing and unity in general. Just the fact that we can see ourselves in each other and others can see themselves in us. And when you say that you're paying homage to certain people and, you know, trying to honor other women, it's like you're honoring yourself. It's reinforcing the honoring of yourself, which is just,
absolutely,
we need to do that more, especially for those of us who don't feel like we are validated by mass media or by other people, or we feel like we're at the bottom of the totem pole. You know, I've heard that phrase a lot when it comes to Black women, and it's not true. It's just simply not true. So to make the effort to honor ourselves by honoring others is just a beautiful thing.
Thank you.
Well done.
I consider myself very blessed to just be in this space to have received this vision, because I do think that the vision for All Her Words was kind of a seed, you know, planted in me, and I just happened to be, you know, the orchestrator of it. So, you know, it's really more so moving through me versus being, you know, mine. I don't possess it.
Mm-hmm.
I, you know, I'm just something that is a channel mm-hmm. of it for it.
Yeah, that's it's so amazing that you're saying this, because I don't think I think I followed All Her Words after starting Wellspring Words. So mm-hmm. I didn't know about it before start. And then it's like, as soon as I started Wellspring Words, I found it and I really like looked deeply into it. I was like, oh my God, like this is what, but as you said, as you said in your reply to my message, like, well, what I interpreted from that was like, you know, people can get what they need from different places. Right. And we're all Absolutely. In this together, you know, Absolutely. Like the people that you reach may not be the people that I reach, and the people that I reach may not be the people that you reach, but we're all working towards the same thing, which I think is a really beautiful way to look at it.
Yes, exactly. And even, you know, there's so much that I've written on and about All Her Words, about, you know, its conception and its mission and its purpose and its intention. And early on, one of the things that I wrote is that this is nothing new.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think a lot of times when beginning new platforms or companies or brands or whatnot, people kind of hone into why this is different.
Mm.
And it was important that I say, this is not new. And this is not the start of something. This is a continuation.
Right.
And I kind of look at what I'm doing and how I'm doing it as a continuation. So there's this long road, right, of work being done. And if you, you know, think about kind of like a toy train, and mm-hmm. you have the tracks on that train, and there's the pieces, you know, and this yeah. piece connects to this piece, and this piece connects to the next piece. And that's how the tracks keep on going, by all these pieces connecting. I feel that All Her Words is just one of those pieces connecting to the piece before it and the piece after it, so that the next piece, you know, can connect and so on and so forth. So I think that's very important for us to recognize in the work that we're doing, also because this is never a competition.
Thank you. Yes, I was going to mention that. Yeah.
My vision is not in competition with yours. Your right. vision is not in competition with mine. My work is not in competition with yours. It's kind of cyclical and reciprocal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're existing in this together. And, you know, again, it's just, it's that continuation. This is that train track, that road, that path, you know, yeah. et cetera. So,
yeah, it seems to me, you know, when starting something new, especially if you're starting it on your own, and like me, if you don't have a big following or want a big following, because personally, I don't want a big following on my own personal account, but mm-hmm. for what I'm doing for Wellspring Words, that would be great. So that way people can feel what we're trying to do more. Right.
Right.
But if that's the case, and you're coming from an area that you've never done something like this before, you've never hosted a platform, you've never had to interact with so many people and be so responsible for certain things, and essentially not mess up your message, you know, depending on what you're saying, yes. it's really mm-hmm. a lot of responsibility, and it can make you feel really insecure. So I think when you're yeah. in that place, it's easy to look at the next similar platform and say, well,
absolutely.
Either nitpick what they're doing or really put yourself up against them. Like, that is the gold standard. And if I'm not meeting that, then what, why am I even doing this? And you just scrap your whole yeah. project, forgetting the larger vision.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. That's hard. And I know a lot of people at this age, I should say, like late 20s, early 30s, are starting to reimagine the way that their lives look, and the way that they, if they work for themselves, if they work for other people, if they have mm-hmm. extra projects, what is fulfilling them? Do they have control yeah. over what is fulfilling them? And this yeah. can be a major roadblock when they get started. So thank you for yeah. mentioning that, because just want to kind of dispel that. It doesn't have to be that way.
Absolutely. And it's so interesting that you say, you know, age, because I am now entering into my late 30s. And, you know, so I'm now shifting out of the age bracket that I started creating from and for, which is very, you know, interesting mentally, but also still though, I am still speaking to that younger me. I'm still kind of feeding into the, you know, idea of be what you needed when you were younger.
Right.
And, you know, I'm nurturing these very different versions of women, you know, right. not only the versions of women that I have been, but also nurturing and growing this version of woman that I am. Some versions I'm kind of like undoing and reconstructing, you know, kind of to rethread her tapestry so that I can come into this new version of woman that is more aligned with this version that I've always seen, but that still feels very unfamiliar, you know, because I'm still kind of like shedding these old versions. So it's just super interesting. As you know, I heard you say that age, I'm like, ooh, I'm actually now.
You're like, not me.
I'm moving out of that, but it's beautiful nonetheless, and it's amazing nonetheless, because still we are able to connect, because age is just, you know, a factor, but it's not necessarily a determining factor as to like how we connect and what experience we can, you know, we can speak to. So
And how we feel about ourselves and know ourselves. Like I just posted an episode that I did with one of my former students who is 21 probably at the moment, or 20, between 20 and 22, probably 20. And her wisdom is just, you know, her articulation, her wisdom. Yes, she's a university student, so she has, you know, she's in that realm of articulating and thinking deeply and critically analyzing, but she's taken the decision to know herself really well and look at herself in terms of different aspects, her social, her spiritual, her mental, her physical, all of these things. And really, I wasn't doing that at that age. I really wasn't. So there's a lot to learn from everybody. You know, as you said, age is just a factor.
Absolutely.
It doesn't really matter. But I think that our platforms really give women specifically a chance and a space and that kind of permission to know that you can go that deep.
Yes. For sure. I agree.
Yeah. Let's pivot over to a little bit more of your personal journey, if that's okay, because I'm always so curious to know, like, who is the person behind all of this and where are you coming from? And I mean, thankfully on your own personal Instagram page, you do share a lot of your writing and it's very poetic. It's lovely. It's deep. It makes, so I have on my counter here, like this, kind of this rose, it looked a little bit better before. I got it from the store on Valentine's Day, but this is the kind of aesthetic that I feel like it's romantic, but it's not Hollywood romantic, right? Like it, when I read your writing and the musings that you share, that's how I feel. Like, I feel like I can go deep too. So it's almost like a permission for me. So can you tell us a little bit about your personal journey with writing, with spirituality, how your expression, let's say?
Yeah. So I've always been a very deeply feeling person, you know, the kind of traditional and popular word to describe me would be sensitive. I have a great affection for the word tender, which I think, you know, is sensitive as well, but tender is a word that resonates with me a little bit more. But oddly enough, and not even oddly, I'm sure there's many people that would understand this, being a sensitive person is not often seen as a positive attribute, you know, because sensitivity is related to softness and fragility and kind of represents an ineptness to handle the full throes of, you know, of life. And my mom and I actually, who, you know, my mom is kind of like my kindred spirit. I believe she is one of my soulmates. We are very different in that way because my mom is not so much a sensitive person. And so growing up, actually, there was this one time when my mom and I were kind of at odds, and we just had been through a series of just really rough periods. And whatever it was this night, I had become so emotional and was crying so much that I pretty much like gave myself a migraine. And so I had gone to bed early. And I overheard her late that night speaking to a good friend of hers. And she was saying something to the effect of, you know, I can't understand her. I don't understand her. She's so sensitive. And I was very hurt in that moment because this was my mother, the one person that I felt just really understood me and that I was fully myself with. And she was telling this person that she basically could not understand me because I was different from her, but different in a way that like wasn't a good way. That's how I took what she said to mean. That's how I felt that she meant it. And I carried that conversation, and not just what she said, but how it felt to hear her say that with me for a very, very, very long time. And it wasn't until a couple of years ago that she said something to me during a phone call. She basically said to me that my sensitivity is one of the things that makes me who I am, that makes me special. You know, it is one of my greatest attributes and characteristics. And to hear my mother say that and to hear her honor that was so affirming for me and helped me to see kind of what I've always felt, which is that this is like my superpower. You know, this is why I am able to write. This is why I'm able to connect with people in the way that I do, but see it as a strength and not a weakness. So I came to that in saying that, like, I've always been a deeply feeling person. Mm-hmm. And my mother saw that early. My mother is a writer. She has always believed in journaling. And I'm so sorry, I forgot to turn off my sound. But so she recognized that that early on, recognized that we were not the same in that way, and that there was a depth that maybe she would not be able to fully, I don't want to say understand. I can't think of like the word right now, but basically that I was another outlet outside of just speaking to her.
Right.
And so her as a writer, a part of her writing is journaling. And I feel that for a lot of writers, mm-hmm. they kind of do that. Free writing, journaling enables them to write more freely.
Yeah.
And so she would always encourage me to journal. And I would be like, no. There was just something about it that I was like, no, I don't want to put my feelings down on paper. And then at a certain point, I think it was around maybe towards the end of elementary school, beginning of middle school, 1999, actually, I keep all of my journals. I've kept every journal that I've ever had. And I have my first journal. And I think its first entry is like August 1999. I started to put my feelings on paper. Mm. I think that's when I started writing. It's only been, though, in recent years that I have accepted that it is a gift to be able to translate these feelings, not just for myself, but for others.
Right.
Because translating or transcribing, I often say like transcribing the heart, because that literally is what it feels like. Mm-hmm. I think the heart speaks a very different language for which there is no language for, except the language that we give it. That is a very delicate thing.
Oh, yeah.
And that is what my writing and my gift and my intention is rooted in, is kind of transcribing that delicateness, transcribing that tenderness, transcribing that fragility that does not make us feel less than, but that makes us feel seen, heard, understood, held, mm-hmm. safe. Found,
right?
You know, that gives us a sense of sanctuary.
Yeah.
So that's kind of my personal story and my personal journey with, you know, with my words. But I ran from this gift for a very, very, very long time. It's only been within the couple of years that I've really like sat in this and poured into this. Mm-hmm. And I'm 36. You know, so
why did you run from it? Yeah. I'm wondering why you ran from it, because I had this feeling personally over the new year when I was back at the family home. You know, being at the family mm-hmm. home sometimes, especially when you've been out for so long, and I've been out of the family home for like 10 years now, almost 10 years. So being back there, it brings up a lot of things and
so much,
but I think it's a good place to start working on or continue working on some certain things about yourself. So I was doing a lot of that. And I did like this end of the year, beginning of the new year, full moon ritual and everything. It was a lot of tears, a lot of writing, a lot of everything.
Releasing, yeah.
A lot of releasing and a lot of accepting, because I just mm-hmm. thought, I just had this thought come into my mind that maybe your way with words when you're writing the way that it comes out so easy, the way that, you know, you get like this, you're in a different headspace. It's like nothing else exists around you. Maybe that's not, you're not being contrived, because I would tell myself before that I was being contrived. Maybe that's because it's a gift. Maybe that's because that's what you're meant to be doing. That's why it mm-hmm. comes so easily. Mm-hmm. Why does it come so easily if you're not meant to do it, right? It's not like you learn this. This is just how it comes. So I had to accept it then. It's still taking a little while to get over my past feeling, the limiting beliefs that I had before. So I'm wondering, when you mentioned that, I was like, oh, yes, like I feel that especially. Mm-hmm. Why do you think you ran from your gift? And what was there like any defining moment that made you say, okay, I have to just accept it and move forward with it?
Why did I run? Because it is some truths are very hard to settle in, sit mm. with, accept. And I think that that's one of the things about writing, you know, when I put the pen to paper, that makes it real. The minute something is in ink, that makes it real. I can no longer not face it.
Right.
Right. And so there was like most of what I write, and I usually previously now I do write in my joy, in my love, in my, you know, in my happiness. Mm-hmm. But before, most of what I would write would be because I had reached kind of like my threshold of sorrow or pain or grief or mourning, that there was nowhere else for it to go. And I had to let it go.
Right.
And so, I wouldn't say that it felt burdensome, but it was very heavy. The words were very heavy.
Right.
You know, my feelings were very heavy. And so it did not feel like a good place to be, and definitely didn't feel like a good place to share. And I'll also say that when I really first started sharing on the internet, on Instagram, when I joined, I had people very close to me, you know, saying, Isis, why are you like, it's a lot. Mm-hmm. It's so much. It's a lot, mm-hmm. which kind of, you know, kind of touched at very tender pieces of me going back to my childhood when I would be told like, I'm too much and it's right. a lot. And so then that would cause me to pull back. But then this is what I know for sure. Is that when something is yours, when it is an anointing for you, which is a calling, a gift, it will keep coming at you.
Yeah.
Right? Because it's like a magnet. The magnets cannot stay apart.
Yeah.
And so for me, writing has felt like that I'm one magnet, and these words, you know, that have to be written is the other magnet.
Yeah.
And I could only keep repelling it for so long, and it would keep coming after me. So my defining moment actually wasn't necessarily about writing per se. It was just about what I was choosing to like root my life in, and really the intentions I would set and kind of like the path I was taking. It didn't really come until when I moved from New York. I'm from Los Angeles, but I lived in New York for 13 years. Mm. Came back to Los Angeles because it was just time to leave New York, but also had a business opportunity. I'm an event producer by trade. Mm. So I had an opportunity to come back to Los Angeles to work on a music festival in Las Vegas. And one morning I was sitting at my boss's house, who is I call her my fairy godmother. She's the one who brought me onto the team to help produce this music festival. I was just, you know, sitting outside one weekend, just decompressing. And, you know, something spoke to me and was just like, one day you will stop running from what's chasing you and chasing what is running from you. Mm. And I said, okay, you know,
yeah.
But even still, I kept kind of running. And then through a series of events, losing my father, experiencing very deep depression, going through relationships, et cetera, just life. I kind of kept remembering that moment, mm-hmm. that moment of like, when are you going to stop running from what's chasing you? And the words kept calling me. Spirit kept speaking to me. So basically, the conception story for All Her Words is, as I recollected, is one night I was sitting on this very couch, felt myself kind of like sliding back into a depression. I was still mourning the death of my father. And I you know, had been asking spirit and just really praying, like, I can't go through this again. I can't go through depression again. I had been through a very bad bout of it a couple of years prior, almost did not make it out of it. And I just said, in my head, I remember texting a girlfriend, kind of almost begging her to tell me what to do. I cannot find those texts. I've looked for them. And I remember her saying, you need to use your voice. And in my mind, because for me, depression is just very, I'm quiet. Mm-hmm. There's no voice. I have no inspiration. There's no words. Spirit is not speaking to me. It's just like, it is dead silent. Mm. So I hear this, you need to use your voice. And I'm like, what voice? I don't have one. Mm. I can't even see myself right now. But then something said, go get your computer, which was very odd because normally when I write pen to paper, but the voice was like, go get your computer so you can just flow. Just let the words go. And that's when I started writing what is now Words for All Her Words. But everything was coming out as she this and her that, because I could not see me clearly. And so I was almost speaking of a woman that I couldn't see, or women around me that I couldn't, that I could see, mm-hmm. that were where I was, but were kind of on the journey in a way that I wasn't journeying, but I wanted to be. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't, you know, kind of the success story. I say that in that moment, I didn't want to hear a success story. I didn't want to hear, you're going to be okay. Keep fighting. Like, you got this. I didn't want to hear that. I wanted a mirror. Mm. I wanted somebody who was in their valleys, like I was in my valleys, and talking about what it was to be there, but still be getting through it though.
Right. Right.
You know? And so, that's how it started. You know, I think I really started accepting this as my path and kind of walking that path through All Her Words. Mm. And I know a lot of people say that, you know, things save them, but All Her Words was really my kind of, I would say, you know, like my lighthouse.
Yeah. Yeah. That's beautiful. I'm getting emotional. I'm also quite sensitive too, especially these days where I'm just allowing myself to be more vulnerable, to be more open. And
it's a lot.
It really is a lot. It's really a lot. And I'm thinking of myself in certain scenarios and other people who I know who are close to me, who are experiencing things. And what you said right now made me think that at that point when you're in your valley, I mean, even just thinking about it as a valley, there is an inherent hope in there, right? Because you know that a valley just doesn't exist on its own. Otherwise, it'd be a plain, right? It wouldn't be a valley. You need a peak, right? So you know that there is a point. Yeah, you're going to get there, right? But that also, it's the place that's open, if you think about it visually, yes. right? Like, you can pour mm-hmm. into a valley, and you can yeah. receive when you're in a valley. Not that you yeah. can't receive when you're at the peak. That's not even, you know, part of the analogy.
But the reception
analogy.
Is different.
The reception different. Is different. Yeah, the reception yeah. is different. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So for anyone listening who feels like they're in that place, I don't want to, you know, do the, just fight through it. You can get there. But maybe, you know, a different perception, different
Walk perspective through, can help. Like, And one of the first pieces that I wrote, which speak to just the heart, really, like the root, the soil of All Her Words, is we speak of our valleys like we speak of our peaks, to remind our bloodlines that how we unravel is just as powerful as mm-hmm. how we become.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Like, those words came through me, you know, and I say that a lot about my writing. Like, I say that these words possess me. I do not possess them.
Yeah.
It is a gift. I do not possess it. I do not control it. I can call upon it, but this is a gift that I am a vessel for receiving. And I think for me, that is very important for me to know, so that I stay in reverence to it.
Yeah.
You know, and I was speaking to a friend the other day too, just saying that it's a very odd thing to be finding your footing as you're walking. And that's what a lot of my journey right now feels like. I'm finding my footing as I'm going. And that is to say that, to admit that basically, like, I don't know what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. now I've become very comfortable in it and I have no issue with it. But before, that was very uncomfortable for me to admit, because I think also there's an expectation, especially when we are seen as one thing and we know ourselves to be another thing. And maybe we are both of the things, but we feel more this thing than, you know, than that thing.
Yeah.
It's very hard to admit that, like, I don't know. And I'm kind of, I'm literally figuring it out as I go.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, you're speaking to my heart right now, my soul, especially in those periods of transition, you know, when, and if you're a person, as you said, who is seen as one thing, or when I speak, I have a really high level of conviction. Well, it sounds like I'm convicted. Yeah. It sounds like I know what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. And I've gotten this feedback at jobs that, you know, that's the reason why they hire me, right? Because they're like, oh, she knows what she's talking about. And maybe sometimes I do, maybe sometimes I don't. I don't know everything. I'm just interviewing, but how much can I tell you that I know in 30 minutes interview, you know, especially at the time as an early career person. And then you get into it and then it's like, actually, I don't know what I'm doing, but not feeling comfortable in that place of uncertainty, just too much pressure. And then you start, for me, I started to kind of act like I knew what I was doing, even when I didn't, and wasn't open to not having to not know what I'm doing, if that makes sense, you know?
It does, absolutely.
Gets you into a lot of trouble. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I did want to touch briefly on your spirituality, because you mentioned hearing from the spirit. And then I heard in some podcast episodes of your own that you're quite a spiritual person, and it's been something that you've been with for your whole life, basically, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. How does that contribute to the way that words flow through you?
I mean, I think it's everything. Mm-hmm. You know, lineage and heritage speaking, my father is Nigerian. He is Yoruba. And if anyone is to know anything about West African cultures, you know that they are very, very rooted, not only in religion, but in, you know, in spirit, even down to, you know, the understanding of and the way in which children are named and why they are named in the way that they are, naming ceremonies, you know, that happen, you know, and believing that a child already knows their purpose from the time that they are conceived and they are in the womb. And so they tell you their purpose and you name them based on that purpose. And that name is who they become, you know, in this life. So, you know, my father is Yoruba, my ancestry on my mother's side has some indigenous or Native American. I've stepped away from saying Native American because now I understand that that is not necessarily like politically correct. And I'm learning all this, you know, in language. But my mother's father's father supposedly was Blackfoot Native American. And my grandfather's history is one that's very deep. And he studied a lot of, you know, cultures and practiced martial arts, which is, you know, very rooted in earth energy and spirit energy and how it, you know, how it flows through the body and whatnot. So just all that to say is that I grew up in a very spiritually rooted home.
Mm-hmm.
And so I know nothing but that.
Yeah.
You know, I grew up having very vivid dreams and knowing that those dreams were, you know, on a different plane.
Yeah. So to speak. And being okay with that, right?
You
weren't second guessing it.
Yeah. Or feeling things, being very connected with my family in such a way where if something feels wrong, we're like, okay, what's going on? Are you okay? Are you okay? Or feeling something and not acting on it because we shrug it off. And then days later, or weeks later, finding out that somebody very closely connected to us was going through something. And then, you know, kind of like recollecting or thinking back to that feeling and saying, oh, this is why I was feeling that. It's actually odd to explain the connection to spirit, because I don't understand how we think that we are not.
Yeah.
Like, how are we beings that grow in the womb of a woman, much like a seed grows in the soil, you know, where the womb of a woman is the seed in a soil.
Mm-hmm.
Our umbilical cord is like the roots of the seed. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, how do we not see? how do we not see the replication, you know, in that? I'm extremely rooted and unapologetic about it. Like, to me, it just makes total sense. Like,
Yeah, absolutely.
Nature is sitting there and basically mirroring exactly, you know, exactly that. And like I said, these words move through me. Mm-hmm. There's no other way to explain how sometimes I will write something down and I'll look at what I've written and I'll say, I know that this has meaning, right? Like, yeah. I understand that this has meaning, but I don't quite grasp it myself. Mm-hmm. But I know it's the truth. But I myself, my mind doesn't necessarily have the understanding. And I kind of have to think on it to make sense of it.
Right. Yeah.
Or, you know, I'll wake up at random hours in the very early morning and words will just be like literally kind of coming out of me. I feel like there's no explanation other than it moving through spirit.
Right. And I think the more that you're doing it, the more you're opening the portal, it feels like, the more that they're able to. You know, mm-hmm. the more receptive you are, the more you just open yourself. But I can imagine there's some cognitive dissonance, you know, between what's coming through you, what you're writing, and then feeling like, just give me a minute. Or like, did I write that? Yeah. Or what is this meant to mean? Even that, you know, especially in a world that really doesn't place importance or doesn't honor our spiritual selves or doesn't honor spirituality in life, you know, as life rather. I'm at the university I work. I'm working in a seminar it's called graphic violence, and the graphic part is meant to represent the way that we use words, written violence, essentially. And so the students are learning a lot about how words can be violent just inherently by writing them, and not necessarily using derogatory words or using words in order to cut people or bring down things, but just the nature of representing something, maybe in a way that's not meant to be represented, right? Or you can't represent that. Like, if we're talking about ethnography and anthropology, right? Like, how do you go into a culture, see what you see, interpret what you interpret, and then represent it based on that? And so actually for a while now, when you're talking about words flowing through you and you not owning them, but them owning you and them having their own presence, being their own entity, it's, for me, the direct opposite of words as violence, because we manipulate, as humans, we manipulate words and we make them what we want them to be. We use them to tear people down. We use them to manipulate and to create these hierarchies so people can feel like, I belong here, you belong there, even in just certain, like, you know, African-American vernacular English versus, you know, certain, oh my gosh. It's like things are flowing at me now. Things are starting to make a lot more sense. It's very deep. World Englishes. What Englishes are considered to be the ones that you would need in order to move forward? Like, when I moved overseas initially to Korea to teach English, I mean, I'm from the US.
Oh my goodness. Their language is so very different.
Yeah, their language is different. But in order for me to be qualified to teach there in Korea, I needed to be from one of seven countries of native English speakers. There's not only seven countries that speak English natively, but I could only be from one of those seven in order to get that kind of job there. That's US, Canada, Australia, South Africa, UK, and I think like Ireland, and then somewhere else, I can't remember. But what about Indian English? What about Nigerian English? What about all the other Englishes that people are not considering to be valid because of where they come from? I mean, that's violence. That's an extreme violence, because people now, you know, internalize that rejection as their own personal rejection, that they don't matter. Even if they get to the top, you're speaking the highest, you know, register of British English in India.
Yes.
Right? It doesn't matter because you're still Indian. I've had students want to, oh my gosh, it breaks my heart, who have wanted to remove their native accents to sound more American. Oh my God.
I mean, that's, oh my goodness. I think I need to look into studies and books done about just names, because even my name, people are aware now, because I have my first name and my, you know, my Instagram handle, that Isis is not my, you know, my only name or my first name.
Right.
My first name is actually Eniafe Biafe. That's my whole first name. But when I Very rarely. Well, nobody really calls me my full first name. Most of my family, they're just calls me Annie Afe, or they call me Annie. Mm. When I went to high school, I started going by Isis, which is my first middle name. I have three middle names because I wanted to divorce myself from this thing that made me different.
Right.
So I'm already different because I'm a brown girl.
Mm-hmm.
Then my name on top of that. Mm-hmm. There is no way that I am not different.
Yeah.
You see me, I'm different. You read my name, I'm different. Like, my difference is kind of, it precedes me.
Right. Yeah.
And I wanted to eliminate some of that because to be different in that way meant for me growing up, you were a target.
Mm-hmm.
Target for ridicule, target for racism, target for bigotry, target for being ostracized. Yeah. And I think it's interesting that people do not understand how visceral language can be and how visceral language leads to then visceral actions.
Right.
I've had many people in my life, you know, even people very close to me say, I mean, words don't really mean anything.
Wow.
Actions do.
Wow.
And it's like, but how do you not understand that one thing leads to the other? Because words, before they come out of your mouth, come from your head.
Yeah.
Come from your spirit, come from your heart.
Yeah.
You know? So language is what I say. Language is bae. Language is my first language, you know? Like, I love language. I love other languages and how, you know, because other languages, for example, I sent somebody a quote recently, and this is the case for many languages, how things are kind of like in reverse. So this one thing that I sent to a friend was about the I love you in French, how, you know, in America it's, or no, I'm sorry, I miss you.
Mm.
So in, you know, English it's I miss you, but in French, basically the translation, it would translate as you are missing from me.
Oh.
Which is that lands very differently.
Oh yeah, it's different. It's different.
You know?
Yeah.
So yeah, I just, language is my shit.
I feel you. It's mine too. I've been so into words for such a long time. And I even at some point started a master's in applied linguistics. But then when I started doing it, I was like, this is not what it needs to be for me.
Right.
It did not see the world the way that I saw it. And I know that's okay, Kem, that's the purpose. You go and you take from that learning and you go and make it what you want to be. But I didn't see myself doing that at the moment. Like, even I wrote one because I had to withdraw from the program. It wasn't right for me. And you can't just stay in something that's not right.
No.
Because you think you're supposed to, right? Mm-hmm. I did an academic paper, and it was about the way that neurodivergent learners, second language learners, actually assimilate learning a second language versus neurotypical, like people who just, their brains are neurotypical as it is. People who have maybe autism or have different neurodivergencies, how do they act? But there was like no writing on this. I couldn't even find literature on it. I had to just pull pieces and pieces from here and do the analysis together. And obviously that is the place for, if I wanted to take it into the thesis, into the PhD, the dissertation, that's the gap that I would fill. But I just felt, I was sad that hadn't been done. Why, how are we looking at the world? If we're looking at language, if we only allow certain people into that bubble of learning language and becoming great, then where does it leave the other people? I'm not someone who's for hierarchies. I don't know if you could tell, but I'm definitely, I cannot deal with it. I don't even know how I've dealt with it for so long, to be honest, but perhaps it's also because of growing up in a Nigerian household, patriarchy is strong, you know, you feel that.
Which is very interesting because the women run everything. Like, we know from the inside that, like, yes, but also no, very much no, yes.
That's the major cognitive dissonance, you know, like when, and I know it's kind of a trail off, but I just want to mention it, like, growing up in America, in a Nigerian American household is different than growing up in a Nigerian household, of course, in the country, right?
In Niger, yes.
Yeah. So like Nigerian American, it's like you get really the best of both, in my experience, the best of both, you know, but you don't get the patriarchy so deep, only when other Nigerians come around, and then it has to be strong. Yes,
because they are.
Oh yeah.
They are rooted in home.
Yeah. So all of that comes up to the surface, but going back to Nigeria, it's like, in a normal day, if I'm at home and I want to open a bottle of wine and the family shares it, okay, cool, I can open it. But in Nigeria, oh no, women are not supposed to touch alcohol. What? And me, yeah. I can't be like, okay,
or
no problem. It's just
our
culture.
as my father, you know? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. My dad would kind of be like, you know, sorry to do this. I know that you're not used to this, but women are not supposed to touch alcohol.
However,
I can't just be like, okay, fine. No, I have to be like, that doesn't make sense. Why?
Yeah, like, let's talk about this.
Making him look crazy in front of his friends. Anyway, very, very, very interesting stuff. And very, I think, things that are necessary to think about, you know, as people who, especially Absolutely. People who use language, right? People who are writers, Absolutely. You know, it's very easy, I think, to delve into the world of writing and look at people who you admire and kind of take how they're writing at face value without thinking deeply about how can I use my words in a way that is authentic to me and that mm-hmm. potentially even positively impacts the people around me or impacts people around me in some way.
Yes, exactly.
That intentionality feels really important.
Absolutely.
What a conversation. This is a beautiful conversation.
Oh, good.
This is a beautiful
always.
One.
Anything around language, I think, is always beautiful.
I know. I kind of want to end before giving you space to speak about, you know, where people can find you and stuff. There is something you posted on All Horrors yesterday, and it ties into what you were mentioning at the beginning of this episode. I'll just read part of it to what to people who are listening. So the quote says, please tell your story, even if just to yourself. Mm-hmm. That was beautiful. And then part of the caption, you said, by definition, a story is an account of past events in someone's life or in the evolution of something. But in reality, a story is and can be many things. A story is a landscape for reimagining, as you mentioned. A story can be a moment, a recollection, a history, a conversation, a prayer. A story can be finished, but it can also be unfolding. A story can end undone, whether it be with a period, a question mark, or an ellipsis. Its ending is not indicative of its worth or its value or its right to be told. Oh my gosh, when I read that, I read, you know, there's a certain thing. I don't mean to be a fangirl. I really don't. But there's a certain.
I don't think, and you know what? Like, let's talk about this fangirl. I don't even think, you know, because like that has a negative connotation. And I think about that sometimes too, when like I constantly repost, you know, like one particular person. Mm-hmm. It is acknowledging a resonance.
Right.
You know, it is acknowledging a thing that you can't say or you can't see or you can't exhibit or you can't, like, you really, like, you haven't been able to flow with that somebody is. And it's like, aha.
There it is.
Yeah. And you need to acknowledge that aha, that connection. Again, the train tracks,
mm-hmm.
you know? If there's a track in your life and it's this missing piece and you find that missing piece through someone else's words or imagery or music or movement or what have you, it's like
mm-hmm.
to find that missing piece. So no judgment here.
Awesome. I love it. Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you for being on this call and having this conversation. Where can people find you if you want to be found?
Yeah. So people can find me, find what I have left to be found.
Yes.
my personal Instagram page is Eniafe. That is E-N as in Nancy, I-A-F as in Frank, E.I-S like Sam, I-S. And then for All Her Words, it is just All Her Words, no spaces. And I have websites, you know, for both of those as well. And, you know, as I am growing and I am developing, the kind of art and creation that moves through and from me grows and changes and, you know, and does the same. And I say that I am a woman in process.
Beautiful. Thank you so much. And I'll be linking all of that so people can find you directly. It's awesome. Thank you so much. It's been great. It's a wonderful way to start my morning too.
It is absolutely, absolutely my honor. I thank you for giving me this honor.
Oh, thank you very much. And thank you everyone for listening to this episode. I hope you were able to enjoy it, to sit back and just relax in the way that we've been relaxing and chatting today. If you want to find us, you can find us on Instagram at Wellspring Words. You can send us an email at bewell@wellspringwords.love. Also check out our written pieces on our website, www.wellspringwords.love. And we will catch you later. Bye.